In Northwest News on 88.5 KNKX, the word epidemic is often used when discussing opioid use in King County. In fact, a task force was formed earlier this year to come up with recommendations addressing the issue. Those suggestions, they're being released this month. But ahead of that report, 88.5's Ariel Van Cleve sat down with a senior researcher at the University of Washington's Alcohol and Drug Institute. She asked Caleb Bantagreen if we're talking about drugs, drug use, and treatment in the right ways.
You use the term opioid use disorder rather than addiction, but I'm wondering why.
You know, we have people who have depression. We have people who have diabetes. We have people who have cancer. We don't call them cancer, depression, or diabetes. We don't label them and ultimately stereotype and reduce them. It really, I think, dehumanizes people ultimately. And so that's why is so that people understand that these are human beings first and foremost, who are suffering with a medical condition. And as we are speaking about, it is a treatable medical condition if people recognize it and come forward to get that treatment and that treatment's actually available.
So how does this work? Are our bodies primed for this disorder?
Our bodies are hardwired to like opioids, and that is because we have an endorphin system. And what endorphins mean are naturally made morphine. If we both use opioids every day, multiple times a day for a month, we'll both become dependent, physically dependent on opioids. Our body will adjust to them. And if we use for many, many, many months, you may actually be changing your natural endorphin system in a permanent way. With the rise in opioid prescribing over the last 20 years, many more people who were naturally predisposed to like opioids are now exposed to them. And that's why the overall level of opioid use disorder is so much higher.
Are we having the right conversations about opioid use disorder? You're talking a lot about biology, genes, medical condition. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about it in the way that we should be talking about it?
Not adequately. So another way to think about this is about prevention. The peak age of first misusing prescription opioids is 14 to 15 years of age. When you misuse them, you have to try them. And in order to try them, two things need to be present. One is the opioids. You have to actually have physical access. So that's a big piece. But there's the motivation part. There's wanting to use them. But kind of backing up, what does that mean earlier? I think the real conversation needs to happen when the kid can get through the medication safety cap. And the point is, it's now normal. 50% of adults take a prescription medicine every day. We need to make it normal for them to model how they take them and talk about it explicitly, just like hopefully they do with seatbelts. I'm putting on a seatbelt, they're modeling the behavior, and they're talking about it and why it's important.
So the folks who are dealing with this now, who need treatment, the task force that was formed by Seattle Mayor Ed Murray, King County Executive Dal Constantine, they're talking about possibly doing safe consumption sites. Is that something that is a good way to go? There's a lot of debate about that. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, from your perspective, from what you know, mm-hmm. is this a good option?
Yes, it is a good option. It's a good option, like syringe exchange is a good option. And also like distributing naloxone, the opiate overdose antidote, is a good option. Yes, of course you want to prevent the problem. That's the most humane thing to do. And it's the most cost-effective thing to do. But clearly, we have a lot of people who are already struggling with opioid use disorder. They deserve to be alive, number one, and they deserve good care and good services. So there's prevention, there's treatment, and then there also are interventions to keep people alive. And that's where syringe exchange comes in, proven to decrease hepatitis and HIV infections. A proven intervention started in Tacoma in the late 80s. Controversial at the time, not as controversial now. Similarly, take-home naloxone, not terribly controversial, although sometimes you hear people talk about it enabling people to continue to use opioids. Well, you're enabling a person to continue to be alive. And the same thing with a safe consumption facility, it fits in with that as well. The idea is exactly the same, is that you're preventing infectious diseases, and by observing people who are using their own drugs, you're also dramatically reducing the chances of them dying of an overdose.
So long-term treatment for someone with opioid use disorder, mm-hmm. what are the options that are available? And again, is that being talked about in a way that could or should be discussed?
No. This is a big enough phenomenon that I think People really need to understand what opioid use disorder is and that it's a treatable condition. And if you know someone with opioid use disorder, they need to make a fully informed decision about what treatment options they want to take advantage of. And if you think about it, well, one thing you can do is we call it watchful waiting. You can just keep using and see what happens. That's a choice a person can make. They might decide to step it up a little bit and get some social support. They could get more professional help and actually see a counselor or get more formal drug treatment with group and individual counseling, and or they may decide to step it up even higher and actually get on medications. They can do a combination of those things. They're not mutually exclusive. For many people, all those things together are going to be essential. And I also think it's fine if a person makes an informed decision that they wanted to use 12-step. But if they do that, they need to know that they're increasing their chance of dying. That by not using treatment medications like methadone and buprenorphine, you're making a higher risk decision.
So it's not a matter of willpower. I'm not going to will myself to stop.
So could somebody use willpower to fight their way through this, kind of white knuckle it? Yes. That can happen. For most people, it doesn't. So I'm a scientist, and I try to think about what are interventions that are going to help most people most of the time. So it isn't that a person can't do it with willpower. It's just on average that isn't going to work. And would really encourage people who are struggling with opioid use disorder to try those treatment medications and see how they do on them. There are several different medications that are out there, and there are increasing ways to get access to them. In terms of getting people on these medications, there are these different access points. Another really important access point is jail.
Jail.
Jail and prison. People come into jail and prison dependent on opioids. And the standard is that they are allowed to go into withdrawal, and they're going to be sick, and they're often going to have to be on a medical ward to get monitored. And in fact, when I talk to folks who run jails, they will say, I have 12 people in withdrawal in my jail right now. And I ask them, oh, would you, you know, consider having them get stabilized on Suboxone while in jail? Oh, no, I wouldn't consider that.
Why? What are the reasons for that? Like, why not let that be a go-to?
So part of it, I think, is that a criminal justice system is certainly in incarceration has a large punitive component to it.
Mm-hmm.
And letting a person go into withdrawal is part of that punitive component. But it's also supposed to be rehabilitative. So you could think about that both socially but also physically as well. And then there are actually issues as well with insurance and cost. And people who are incarcerated lose their Medicaid insurance while they are incarcerated.
Really?
And so there's to pay for that, somebody has to pay for it. You're going to pay for it on the back end when they come out and overdose and either die or get an ambulance run. It's going to get paid for one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is, could you pay for it in a more preventive way while they're incarcerated?
The word epidemic is often tied to heroin use in this region.
Mm-hmm.
But there are reports now of synthetic opioids across the country. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, are we seeing that here in Washington?
We are seeing little bits of these synthetic opioids locally. We have certainly seen it in police evidence testing. We have seen it in a handful of deaths over the last year or two in Washington state. So we're seeing small little signs of it. I don't see signs yet that it is growing or large. Certainly given that we've had problems throughout much of the United States, including on the West Coast in California and in Vancouver, BC, I would say so far we've been lucky, and I have no reason to think that luck will hold out.
Are there ways to know that it's coming, that we're going to be swept up in fentanyl or anything like that? Are there indicators that we're spotting or you're seeing in research in other parts of the country that you can say definitively when this starts to happen, then this will start happening?
Yeah, because we're talking about opioids, which can cause fatal overdoses, and we're talking about synthetic opioids that you do not know what substance it is, nor how strong it is. Unfortunately, the way you find out that it's here is that a lot of people start dying. That really is the way that you find out that it's here, because the lethal dose is so low and the mortality rate is so high. That's how we would really know, is that people would just start dying.
How do we prepare for that?
The way we prepare for that is twofold. One is that if people are at risk for overdoses, they and their friends and family and others need to know how to recognize an overdose, that you cannot wake a person up, that they're turning blue, and they need to know to call 911, that Washington State has a Good Samaritan law that provides legal protections. So a person who has an overdose and responds to that overdose will not be prosecuted for drug possession charges. And they potentially should be having naloxone, the antidote, on hand to administer rapidly. So that's if an overdose occurs, but hopefully you can prevent that overdose from happening. And you can prevent the overdose from happening in two ways. One is not to use opioids, which sounds like the nice, easy, logical step. However, if you are physically dependent on opioids and or have opioid use disorder, that is not a simple thing. That's essentially like saying, don't eat for a week. So that's not an easy thing to tell a person just not to use. So we're very fortunate that we actually have treatment medications for opioid use disorder, medications like methadone and buprenorphine, brand name Suboxone. They support recovery and they reduce mortality rates by 50%.